Welcome, everybody. You're watching We Heart Therapy, the special series EFT Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Bell, a certified EFT supervisor and therapist here in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. And I am super excited to welcome back to our show. We have Dr. Catherine Rehm, and she is one of the co-directors of the Washington Baltimore Center of EFT Emotionally Focused Therapy. And she is a certified EFT trainer and supervisor. And she's just an amazing, amazing and wise, incredible leader. And we're so blessed to have her. And we also have a special guest with us, Jennifer Olden. Now, she is an EFT supervisor in Sacramento, and she co-hosts the EFT Cafe with Catherine. And if you guys have not heard about the EFT Cafe, or if you haven't had a chance to join it, I highly recommend that you seek out their website. It's a wonderful online learning platform, and you get to watch videos of real sessions. There's some conversation, and you even get transcriptions for some of the videos, which is super helpful for those of you that are a little more visual and like to see the language that Catherine uses. And it's just an amazing, amazing resource. So make sure that you check out the EFTcafe.com. And thank you both just for joining us. And so what are we talking about today? We are going to be talking about something really new and unusual, ketamine-assisted EFT therapy. I'm super excited about this. So Catherine and Jennifer, for those who might be watching this that don't know anything about ketamine, would you mind maybe giving everyone maybe a brief definition of what ketamine actually is? Is this legal to use? Something, you know, is it something people can acquire? Do they have to go to a medical doctor? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, Annabelle, thanks for having us, and thanks for giving a shout out to our beloved EFT Cafe. I'm Jen's the visionary behind the cafe, and it's just been 6 years of growth and gains and courage and, you know, vulnerability, and we just love our cafe community. So thanks for having us here together, and thanks for giving the shout out. Ketamine is technically, it is a medicine. You do get it from a prescriber, a medical prescriber. And it's technically considered a dissociative anesthetic. So you might be familiar with it from the ER or the operating room, those types of places. It's used every day around the world in medical settings of all types. It's one of the six medicines that the WHO, the World Health Organization, deems essential in every medical clinic. It has a very high safety profile and lots of years of use, so it's well known by medical professionals. It was legalized in the 1970. It was especially used in the Vietnam War, and medicine learned a lot about it during the Vietnam era. In mental health care, it's a low dose, what we call a psycholytic dose. It's a low dose of the medicine that floods our brains with glutamate. And glutamate is considered the workhorse or the master switch of the brain. Glutamate has roles in pain, in memory, in inflammation, in depression, and anxiety. Glutamate has roles in lots of mental health experiences or even symptoms. And so anything that floods the brain with glutamate and really amplifies neurogenesis and neuroplasticity, those are features of ketamine. Mental health is interested in mental health. As we know, in psychology, psychiatry, we haven't had a new intervention to offer our clients in a good 30 years, maybe more, depending on who you talk to. And so using ketamine in this safe off-label from an FDA perspective, I know we're all American citizens, but the FDA is relevant for us, maybe not our international listeners and friends, but I believe ketamine is legal in many other countries, but it has a great therapeutic, opens great therapeutic windows for us and our clients to increase and facilitate and be a catalyst for EFT.
Wow, that's beautiful. So you mentioned that this was used like as an anesthetic. Does that mean that it's largely administered by anesthesiologists?
Well, there's a current, yes, at times, in the medical model of ketamine is anesthesiologists want to put the IV in your arm and drip ketamine into your system. and anesthesia has been using ketamine in the OR and in the ER and off-label uses in mental health and wellness clinics for a long time. Psychology and psychiatry are actually in this little bit of a paradigm shift. We don't want anesthesia dictating mental health care. Right. So psychiatry and psychology are starting to coalesce and to be more vocal about how a low dose of ketamine can facilitate psychological growth and healing and recovery from trauma, recovery from depression, for instance. And so we are using the low dose of ketamine in slightly different ways than typical anesthesiologists are.
Mm. So how is ketamine administered?
Over to you, Jen.
It can be administered a couple of different ways. It can be administered with a troche. And a troche is like a lozenger. It's like orally. You take mm-hmm. what is similar to a pill and let it dissolve in your mouth. You can take it through an IV. You have to go and work with a prescriber to get the IV or IM, intramuscular.
Mm.
And yeah.
So that would be like in a medical clinic where you'd have to get yeah. the IV version.
Yeah, exactly. You go to get the IV or an IM, you'd go to like a clinic, but you can do the troche at home.
And so in the United States, you're saying it's been legal since the 1970s. Is it legal in every state or are there some states that it's not legal?
Well, it's for mental health use, the FDA approved it for OR and ER use. So the medicine itself in its safety profile is known by our government and medical professionals up and down the scale. We're using it in mental health in an off-label way. And so it has not been approved by the FDA. The FDA in 2019 approved Spravato, which is the nasal spray that you might have heard about, which is one half of the ketamine molecule called S-ketamine. And you have to get it from your psychiatrist and you have to use it in their office. And some people love it and some people don't love it or might in fact hate it. And so this is where psychology and psychiatry was saying, let's not be hung up on just the nasal spray of Spravato, which took half the molecule to be able to patent it themselves rather than deal with the patent for the whole molecule. And so I don't want to get into patents and what's approved and not approved, but it was determined legal in 1970. And then the FDA approved it in 1970. I guess that when you say legal, Annabelle, maybe I'm using the wrong word. FDA approval in 1970 in the OR and ER, and then 2019 for mental health care with half the molecule called Spravato or S-ketamine, brand named Spravato, that you can get from your psychiatrist and use in your psychiatrist's office.
I guess when I think of legal, I'm thinking of accessibility for people to get like the troches or something. I've seen some online, you guys have probably seen this on Facebook, advertising the low dose of ketamine. And, you know, you just, I don't know, like sign up with this company and they start sending it to you. So we're like, is that safe? Is that even like, or is that Canada, is it? Or, you know?
Yeah. There's a couple different, like yes, it's legal. What you're describing is legal and safe. You know, one thing that Catherine didn't mention, but you had mentioned to me before, is that ketamine is safe for like babies even. Doctors have used it. And to me, that just makes it feel very safe. And so it's legal, like Mind Bloom. You have to go through an entire program. You talk to a therapist or a guide and then and a prescriber, and you receive ketamine in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a therapist, you can go through like Journey Clinical and you sign up with them, you pay a monthly fee, and then you are a therapist for clients who are wanting to take ketamine, and they administer it themselves. They take the troche themselves. You never administer the medicine as a psychotherapist in the U.S., but you help integrate, you help connect, you help with the set and setting for the medicine.
Okay. So I'm thinking, yeah, because I'm thinking like medicine. So I remember, you know, with marijuana being originally legalized for medical marijuana, so people could go if they got their medical marijuana card, and now it's legal in a lot of states for just anybody without the medical card to go to a place. So, but cannabis not exactly administered. It's not accessible in that way, it sounds like, where you don't go to like these dispensaries or anything. It's, you got to get it. If you're going to do the intravenous, you go to a medical setting, medical clinic, or the troches would come from one of these companies, or are there other ways, like your psychiatrist, or how else would you get the troches?
Yeah, I mean, Catherine, you can probably, I mean, I can speak to a little bit of it, but you please say more. I think for the psychiatrists, you're asking if the tokies come in, like, ask your question again. Sorry, Annabelle.
Like, how would people access this? Is it only, I mean, obviously there's not dispensaries that sell it like marijuana, you know, or you could go, like, if you were doing, you know, peyote or mescaline for some therapeutic purposes, you can go, you know, to some reservations in some particular places. It's fairly accessible in a lot of areas. So is the troches, is this available only through these online companies, or do you, your psychiatrist, or where do you get
those? Yeah, you need a prescriber. You need a doctor to be able to get the medicine, the ketamine medicine. And they ask about your blood pressure and medical contraindications. They make sure it's safe.
Responsibly used, it sounds
right, and responsibly used, and it, you know, it's used in the clinic, or like you can get it in the mail from a place like Mind Bloom or
compounding pharmacies actually compound the troches, Annabelle.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your doctor, as Jen's saying, your doctor writes a prescription, and instead of sending it to a more traditional pharmacy like a CVS here in the States, they send it to your local compounding pharmacy. That's and really, they make the troches at their facility, and then you pick it up or they mail it to you.
Okay. So let's talk about, okay, so we're saying that this is medicinal, and kind of what pops in my mind, and again, because I don't know a whole lot about this, and that's why, you know, we're doing this episode, and I hope that many of you that also are unfamiliar will be able to educate yourselves. And I'm thinking like the LSD studies that were back in the 60s and the 70s, but I, from what I remember, they weren't really used necessarily medicinally, but more as like to break through some psychological barriers, to open some doorways in the mind. Can you sort of share, you know, when we say that, you know, this is used medicinally, can you share what you mean by that exactly?
Yeah, when I hear the word medicinal, I often think of plant medicines, which ketamine specifically isn't, although now people are saying there is a similar molecule that's grown in the wild that's part of a plant, medicinal plant medicines or plant medicine that we use for medicinal purposes, like herbs. And also, when you say the word medicinal, what also I think of is non-recreational use. And that's exactly what we're proponents of. We know ketamine has a street value. We know it has a stigma. We know it's considered and can be and has been a party drug. We know it can be dangerous. And we want to be very, very thoughtful about the dangers of an overdose or of an addiction. But when we're talking about ketamine for mental health care, we're talking about very low dose in a clinic of some setting. Even with a therapist meeting with a client online, the client isn't just getting a prescription sent to home and then taking it willy-nilly or as much as they feel like it. The troches, when you, as Jen is saying, you put them in your mouth and absorb them through your mucosa, that's the route of administration. It's actually not in swallowing them. And so it takes a long time for the troches to dissolve, several minutes. You need to swish for 15, 18, 20 minutes. That's not a quick high for people, and it has a slower onset. And so the at-home use of ketamine for low dose is considered very safe. And there isn't a large proponent of people or a large contingent of people who abuse it because it's not a quick high. It's not very satisfying. You'd have to swish a lot in your mouth to have a big hit. And it's so fast acting. One of the pieces of ketamine I like so much is it's fast acting compared to, say, psilocybin or MDMA or other plant-based, technically psychedelic medicines. Ketamine is not technically a psychedelic, although it has for some people a psychedelic features, but not for all. And so, you know, we want to be very thoughtful in how we frame this conversation and how we talk about ketamine as a medicine. EFT with ketamine in particular is such a good fit because, as we all know, in EFT, we're humanistic, we're attuned, we're facilitating vulnerable expression of emotion, which is hard for people to do in real life. Mm-hmm. And ketamine is a great catalyst for helping people find their softer feelings, their vulnerabilities, and sharing them because ketamine lowers defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so interesting about it as an adjunct intervention to our beloved EFT model is we do a lot. We clinicians, we EFT therapists and supervisors do a lot to help people learn how to lower their own as well as their clients' defenses. And I started wondering a couple years ago, what would it be like to have the assist, to have the facilitation of a low dose of ketamine to lower clients' defenses? Could I get further, faster in EFT when clients meet the criteria for and are comfortable trying the ketamine during session?
So ketamine, you're saying it's not like an instant, fast, high. So it in that way, it can become, it's not like the kind of thing that people get addicted to. Like I remember even with prescription mental health medications, the fast acting ones, there was a high concern about addiction because people would take it and have, like, you know, momentary effect, like with even up to like 10 to 20 minutes. And so the pairing of change with the pill is what would cause that, and as well as like maybe some street drugs. But you're saying this is such a low dose and meant to have a therapeutic effect. And something that kind of comes forward in my mind that I imagine maybe some others listening might have a question about this, and you'd spoken to this too, maybe about the ethics. I'm thinking of, like, as a field, you know, sort of really, because we know that people may take alcohol or something else to try to chemically lower their inhibitions and be able to be more vulnerable.
The classic altered state.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how would this be, you know, again, like the say no to drugs, and, you know, I'm thinking of like an ethical standpoint, how we can view this in a way, because I know it's not the same, but trying to articulate it in a way that really conveys the heart of it, maybe is something you could speak to.
Want to share, Jen?
Sure. I mean, one thing that I feel like maybe we should say is that ketamine can be addictive for some people sometimes. So it's not that it, you know, can never be misused and overused. Yeah. And so you're asking, how is ketamine, the high of ketamine, in terms of the impact on the client, how is it different from taking a drink of alcohol, for example? Like,
yeah, our use of it as therapists saying it's not okay to go use alcohol to chemically alter your state, but here we're going to chemically alter your state for, you know, a benefit.
Well, I think that's exactly why therapists are so important, like, for the use of ketamine, because mm-hmm. what we do is we help to, like, for example, frame the person's intention. So before they take the troche, we'll ask, what is it that you're working on? Oh, mm-hmm. you're working on engaging when you feel like withdrawing. You're working on finding access to your emotions. Okay. And then, you know, we can accompany them through the experience of ketamine. And then at the end, we help them to integrate the places that they touched on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Which is so much different than, it's not like we're saying, have a glass of wine and come to therapy. You know,
right.
Part of our therapy, we're administering a glass of wine to help you talk about
this. You'll feel you know? Better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think that's why the integration is, I mean, one of the reasons why the integration is so important.
Yeah, let's not forget the neurobiological mechanisms of action. We know with alcohol, I'm oversimplifying it here, and I'm not a medical doctor or medical personnel, so I'm going to say it in very amateur language. We know alcohol is a number. Mm-hmm. And so people might get their inhibitions lowered or get their defenses lowered, but in terms of being a catalyst for growth and change and healing, that's so different than the glutamate antagonist that ketamine provides that increases neurogenesis for a couple of days even. Mm-hmm. And so, and people get instant relief. And so, as we know, ketamine is so helpful with suicide ideation, so helpful with treatment resistant depression. It's just so different than the classic SSRIs or SNRIs or benzodiazepines or Lamictal or any of the other more traditional psychotropic medicines. And so the biological, the neurological mechanisms of action are what science is helping us understand, which leads to growth rather than numb or escape or avoid.
Yeah. It sounds like too, what you're saying, Catherine, is that the therapeutic usage of this is a very particular context for kind of, you know, a therapeutic setting. A client will take this with the specific intention to work on something regarding their mental health versus, you know, if they're taking marijuana or something else, you know, even if it's prescribed, you know, or alcohol, they're not doing that with the intention to come and get therapy alongside it. Usually it's, again, you know, non-prescription is to avoid, right? And even prescription, you know, hopefully they're in therapy, but it's not like we're going to use this prescription medication and have you come and be in while you're experiencing the effects of it so that we can help do some of the work. You know, it's much different in that context where it sounds like it's very specific to aid the process of therapy. And this, so in terms of like maybe usage over time, so we're using this to help with the therapy process, but there's like a endpoint to where, you know, the plan isn't to have them on ketamine forever and always for the rest of their life. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, sure. The good news is ketamine is fast acting and it doesn't take all day and you return to baseline state, you know, like your regular self while the ketamine is still active in your system for 2 or 3 days afterwards. And then you'll feel the gains for a couple of weeks, and then you'll probably need to dose again. And certainly if you have TRD, treatment resistant depression, or SI, suicide ideation, you'll need the research is very clear on ketamine assisted psychotherapy for those two experiences of treatment resistant depression and suicide ideation. 6 infusions, it's called the induction series, 6 infusions of ketamine, escalating doses, 0.5 megs per keg to start, and then increased usually by 0.1 megs per keg each dose, 6 infusions within 2 or 2.5 weeks. So you're really saturating the distressed brain with ketamine to give, ketamine is called the benevolent disruptor. It mm-hmm. disrupts our routines, our intrapsychic habits of how we cope. And so that's why it's so good therapeutically, is because we get the interruption of our typical defenses, but also neurologically, it forces the brain to find new pathways. Mm. It amplifies the pathways. Mm. It increases the neural activity and the speed of neurotransmission. Like, again, there's so much that I'm not qualified to speak of that science is now just revealing and what's emerging and the clarity about ketamine. Mm. So you do often need repeated doses, which some people think is a negative, but as we know in life, nothing changes all at once.
Right. It's not a one and done kind of thing.
That's right. And therapy is nothing changes all at once. We don't expect therapy to be one session intervention.
Right. So we also don't plan like the trajectory of therapy also isn't that once they get on it, they're going to need to be on it forever. It's, you know, dosing according to the therapeutic plan. You know, it sounds like there's a lot that happens higher dosing up front.
Yeah.
And then it's in conjunction with therapy for very specific purposes. And then eventually there would be a plan to, like, you wouldn't need to continue with the ketamine because the work that's being done while with it would start kind of taking over.
Yeah, for instance, if I could just share like maybe two simple client references. One withdrawer with a female pursuing partner. One male withdrawer has had 14 ketamine sessions and then is in a phase right now of not doing any ketamine, and we're doing regular EFT. And there might be a time where he feels and his prescriber feels the need for him to have more ketamine. He has said that ketamine is more effective for his mental health than any of the other mental health medicines he's been on. And then another also recent couple, I did CAP, ketamine assisted psychotherapy, as an adjunct intervention for this couple who was in regular EFT with another provider. And we met 3 days in a row for this person who suffers from combat related PTS, or also known as PTSD, to get 3 doses with his partner in the room. And we did couples therapy at the end of his doses. And for, you know, just as the medicine's coming on, we generally don't do a lot of therapy, but as the dose is you're on the second half of the dose, you start therapy and then you continue as the medicine is still in the system, but the person is basically back. And the therapy is really, like he said, that this has been an accelerator of their couple therapy. And so 3 doses, he's doing integration now. I'm not sure if he'll want to do more. But in the training, I've done a lot of training with a company in the Bay Area called Polaris Insight. And the trainers there talk about 1 to 40 doses. The low is they've had clients come in to try it one time. And the high at the time when I was in training, they said the high is 40 doses, you know, across a lifetime. And so it seems to go in phases for people where you want to get the benefit, you want to get the relief. Ketamine is also well known and well used for chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And so it really is a pain reliever, emotional pain as well as physical pain. People talk about the relief they feel in their bodies and the gains of that. And then kind of have a conversation with your prescriber about timing on redosing.
So, and you're saying that the clients you were working with, they did the intravenous or the intramuscular?
The recent couple of the three, they were IMs. As Jen highlighted, it's an injection. You get the ketamine all at once. And then the first couple I referenced, the 14 doses, 4 of those were infusions and the others were troches used at home.
Okay.
With me on Zoom.
Okay. So if they're doing the intravenous, like what's the actual impact to the client, to their mental cognitive state, and how soon after they take the intravenous dose can you do a therapy?
So intravenous, unless you want to answer, Jen.
No, go. I mean, I yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Intravenous, as we all know, is drip by drip. So the first several minutes of an IV, the client is very much in their typical state. And that's, as Jen's highlighted, that's when we clarify the intention. We talk about set and setting and confirm safety. We have these pre-agreed upon areas of therapy while they're on the medicine. Any altered state we know is a more vulnerable state. We're extra protective of our clients on ketamine. We want them to feel safe. We want them to know they won't be touched except by their partner. That's all pre-agreed upon. And so the first several minutes of an infusion, they can talk. We usually don't encourage a lot of talking because we want them to drop in. They're often listening to music, playlists for ketamine or playlists without words, music without lyrics. And then we'll notice that the ketamine, as the drip is happening, the ketamine builds up in their system. Tracking a question is often hard. And so I might just simply ask, how are you doing? Are you okay? And there'll be a nod, something very simple. And then I'm watching the bag. I'm watching the client. I'm watching their partner. I'm watching the bag empty. And then I'll ask about talking. Does it feel like a good time to talk? And we'll get a yes or a no. Sometimes it's too soon to talk. We never know how ketamine's going to impact somebody. Because it's a dissociative, of course, you can imagine your muscles don't contract in the characteristic way. So on a higher dose of ketamine, it can be hard to talk because we can't move our tongues and move our jaws and our mouths in the ways that we need to form words. And so I just wait. 5 minutes, 8 minutes, 12 minutes, and then try again. And then therapy can happen. It's a little slower processing, which is good in EFT, as we know, as Sue says, the slower you go, the faster you get where you want to go. Mm-hmm. And then it continues for me, the 45 minutes after the dose.
And so you're doing this via Zoom while they're in a medical setting, if they're getting the intramuscular or intravenous.
It depends. There's a clinic I go to in person.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
An IV clinic. It depends on the medical prescriber and their setup and my setup and the client, where the client lives, where I'm licensed, and mm-hmm. what the rules of that jurisdiction are for the prescriber as well as for me.
And obviously we'd have to have an adapted informed consent to,
oh yeah,
you know, go over all this. But so does this general process take like 5 hours, takes 2 hours? Like how long are we talking? 2 hours?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I say 90 minutes to 2 hours. Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah. So I've actually, I've had Dr. Bell. I don't know if I should call you Dr. Bell or Annabelle. But
call me Annabelle.
Annabelle. Okay. So I've actually done the 6 sessions with IV ketamine, and I would get there at 9 and I would be walking out the door at 11:30.
Really?
Yeah. And the first 45 minutes for me, I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways to do it, but the first 45 minutes, the therapist would sit next to me and we would just talk about my intentions. And mm-hmm. then I would sort of mm-hmm. make contact with my body, get in touch with the current sensations. Mm-hmm. And then the IV would be set up. A nurse would come in, put the IV in my arm, give me some Zofran so I didn't get sick. Because mm-hmm. You do get nauseous on ketamine, or can. And then for about an hour, I would be kind of in flight, as they say. And I couldn't really receive therapy at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's different for different people. But the therapy and the came afterwards. I integrated my experience afterwards, and I got clarity about different places in my inner world after the ketamine was 90% out of my system. Mm-hmm. I was, mostly.
So you might be going to see your therapist like hours later or a couple days later, even in some.
I think sometimes that's what happens, an hour later or a couple days later, or you know, for the next hour, you know, mm-hmm. the therapist could be with you. I mean, in my case, it was just 30 minutes of talking.
Okay. So is there would there be a difference in the training that a therapist would need if they're going to be with the client while they're actually under the influence, while they're actually taking it, versus they've taken it and they're out of the direct influence, like they're no longer, I guess, you know, under the influence, and you're doing therapy later and just processing what happened?
So just to be clear, the therapist would sit next to me, and I, you know, signed a consent and asked specifically, like, I'm just the kind of person that likes someone to hold my hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's me. And I said at the beginning, and she got my consent, and mm-hmm. I just want you to sit here and hold my hand. So mm-hmm. she wasn't doing therapy, but she was present 100% of the time.
Yeah. It was still part of the therapy process, but you weren't necessarily doing a traditional therapy session in that way.
Right. And she followed my lead. Yeah.
And you were able to drive home after.
No, an Uber has to come get you.
Oh, okay. So even after the 90 minutes or 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, technically, I mean, I just, just to be safe,
mm-hmm.
they
yeah.
want you to have a ride home, and mm-hmm. they even ask you to not drive for the rest of the day.
Mm.
Even though, I mean, you are in an altered state, and so it's just safer to not be behind the wheel.
Did you feel kind of out of it, or did you feel?
You know, it was different every time. It was different every time. And so sometimes I came home and took a nap,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I went on a walk, mm-hmm. and I would like listen to something. Yeah, that was moving to me, that mm-hmm. helped me to stay connected to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like it got deeper, and I felt like I had more clarity about some mm-hmm. stuck places in my life. So, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Maybe sort of depending on what your brain and your body is really saying that you need in that moment.
Yeah, and I mean, just to also add, like, I have a friend who like did the exact same process I did, and she saw beautiful, brilliant colors, like jellyfish shapes, and I did not see anything. Like the doctor said, well, what do you see? And I said, an eye pillow. Like, I see nothing. So I feel like I had to work with my expectations that ketamine isn't sort of it's not recreational, of course, but it's also not this magic pill that's going to just come and help me transcend all of my problems.
Right.
It's going to do what it needs to do. And then I still have to do all the heavy lifting, you know, with the therapist, with support.
That's really good. So if you are doing, okay, so we're doing EFT while a client is under the influence, how would that look different than EFT without ketamine?
Why don't you go, Catherine?
Okay. Well, first of all, people should come, if they're listening to this anytime in late April of 2024, to come to our training on May 4th, 2024, sponsored and hosted by the Northern California Community of EFT. That's the website you can find us on, because that's the big thing that we're all wondering about. Ketamine is very well known for its medical usage and getting to be better and better known for its mental health care for individuals. And what we're doing is using it for couples. And so as couples therapists, and really proud of our specialty of couples therapy, I can't imagine why wouldn't I bring the adjunct intervention of ketamine to my couples who qualify for it, who are stuck in some way, or whose defenses are just extra rigid for any reason at all. And so the therapy can look a little different, but it's actually all the same EFT interventions. So we have rationale, and we make a clinical decision in collaboration with the prescriber and the couple about if is one partner dosing or both, and do they do it at the same time, the medicine, or do they do it back to back? Or if one partner is doing it today, then maybe next session the other partner will do it, and we collaborate based on need and willingness and comfort. Sometimes a partner isn't going to do ketamine at all, and it's just the one partner that does it. And the EFT isn't any different. It's just I notice myself doing less leading, because the medicine is leading the client where the medicine needs the client to go. I notice myself having to be very much humanistic. Like there's the activity of the therapist is slowed down. We're holding the space. We're allowing space. So I would say, as an EFT therapist with my clients who are using ketamine, I'm less active, until the medicine is the dose has ended. The journey has ended. I'm holding the space. I'm watching their nonverbals. I'm asking them to find their feelings regularly. And I'm doing a lot of evoking. I don't do any conjecture, because I don't want to be suggestive while they're on the medicine, but a lot of evoking. What was that like? Or you made this sound. Do you remember what that was connected to? So I do a lot of transcribing during the ketamine doses, and I write the time down because it helps people remember. Of course, because it's a dissociative, memories are different. Mm-hmm. On the lower doses, initial session ketamines, you can remember a lot of it, but as you increase your dose, you'll remember less and less of it. So it's good to have, it's always important to have a sitter there. It's really important. If we say nothing else, Annabelle, do not do ketamine alone. I'm quoted in the messenger.com as saying Matthew Perry wouldn't have died if he hadn't been alone. Yeah. He took way too much ketamine, 75% more than any of the three of us would need for an abdominal surgery and a legitimate OR. He was on so much ketamine, and he was alone. And you never take a sedative medicine and get in a body of water, even a bathtub.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is really important, that this ketamine is about healing in relationship, not about taking a medicine and then going off by yourself. It's about
not to get high or check out. It's to
actually
do some work
That's right. The healing, as we well know in EFT, and as EFT is so well known for and so effective in, the healing happens in relationship. Ketamine is just a catalyst for that.
I really like, you know, what you've repeatedly said about, you know, connecting with the client about their focus and their intention, which I've found is similar for some of the indigenous ceremonies where, you know, some psychedelics might be used, is very similar, is that they want to have a very clearly defined function and focus versus like, I'm just coming to get high and, you know, whatever. So
right.
I really like that. And in EFT, that's whether they're using ketamine or not, is just a very important aspect of our work, is to define a focus. And so I think that can sort of help maybe distinguish, and you guys can share maybe those who might be a good candidate for ketamine versus not, is, you know, getting around discussing that focus of what's the intention of taking this.
Do you mind if I back up just a tiny bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in watching Catherine's tapes of her sessions while someone was using ketamine, it looks a lot like, as you just said, Catherine, regular EFT. It's different. You're following the client's lead. But also, I just want to add that, like, a very withdrawn withdrawer can find that vulnerability, deep vulnerability on the inside that, you know, we work so hard to access. And then when they're no longer, you know, using or on ketamine, they can find their path back to that same place on the inside, by that sort of reiterating, Catherine, taking notes, helping them to remember, you know, it's like, here's the path to that inner place. And then they know what that path is and can walk it again.
Yeah, so, your body just did it with the assisted ketamine, but let's repeat it and repeat it, you know, as we already know to do in EFT without ketamine, so that you build the muscle memory to go back to that place that was so therapeutic to work
with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. That's good. Yeah. Your body, the ketamine helped you, was the assistant there, and now let's do it without the ketamine assist. Mm-hmm. And so it integrates.
So when they're about to,
go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, when they're going to use the ketamine, like, each time you would be very clear, like, what is it that we're going to be focusing on today? And that's actually just good EFT also, you know, even without the ketamine. But to also, I would imagine in the, when we're trying to decide, is this client a good candidate for ketamine? Or if they're suggesting, hey, I'd like to try ketamine, we would collaborate on what the focus would be.
Yeah, and luckily for us, Annabelle, I don't have the medical training to assess and evaluate. So that's up to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that. The prescribers that I am getting to know and I collaborate with, that is their area of expertise and their judgment call. So they do a full intake, a full mm-hmm. medical intake. And so I like not being a part of that decision making, because I don't know exactly who's a good candidate for, but I know that when I bring it up, some people say no way right away. Fine. I never repeat the conversation or pressure anybody. Other people bring it to me. More and more of our clients are hearing about it. And it's in the New York Times, it's out there, it's being talked about. And so whether I bring it forward or they bring it forward, I always talk about it from a place of stuckness or defense, a place of feeling like I can't quite relax with my own self, in my own body, and that there's a barrier, there's a block, there's a something that I haven't, that therapy, talk therapy, EFT therapy, as experiential as we are and strive to be, people's defenses are real and they're embedded and they deserve them until they're really ready to not have them. And that's when a choice about ketamine can be really therapeutic for a person to determine for themselves, I'm ready to go to see what this defense is. And they get the assist, which is so much, it makes it so much easier for them to be non-defensive compared to what I remember having to do week in and week out, like microsurgery with good people who didn't want to be defenses, but didn't even know they had this many defenses. So yeah. Go ahead. I think
you said before it was kind of like it helps unclog the log jam or something.
Yeah, clears the cobwebs.
Yeah.
So that's why I do it.
Yeah, so you're saying, you know, and it was so beautifully said about, you know, clients that are ready to not be defensive. Like, yeah. Even if they don't know exactly what their defenses are composed of, they're saying, yeah. I really want to break these barriers and get to the other side.
Yeah, because we all know, and the science is so clear, that being emotionally defensive, psychologically defensive, impacts our relationships and limits our life's options. We just keep shrinking to keep ourselves comfortable, and our window of tolerance keeps shrinking, and then our lives get smaller and smaller emotionally, psychologically, relationally. And so if one is tired of that or starting to wake up to the consequences of that, like say midlife, me, you know, like, oh, could ketamine help gently? The benevolent disruptor. Low dose ketamine is such a gentle intervention to facilitate me finding parts of myself that I haven't found or felt in X number of years. And people are often so grateful. They feel a return to self. They feel that they are more whole. One client, the one who did 14 sessions of ketamine so far, says, I feel like a human instead of a robot. The ketamine actually melted this frozen column of shame he remembers starting to form when he was 6 years old. And this person has done tremendous hard work in individual, group, and couple therapy, and nothing was melting his shame in any kind of permanent way. And so he started ketamine in maybe October, and I record them, and by mid-February, he was regularly able and has been since to access his emotion without ketamine.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really touching. And so going back to the ethics, and all of us have to sort through our ourselves and our ethical code and our jurisdictions and what we're allowed to offer or not our clients. Initially, I felt like ketamine, I had to keep it a secret because I was like, oh my gosh, does this mean I'm not very good at EFT? Does this mean that I have more limits than my colleagues have as a human, as a clinician? And it felt weird to talk about. Meanwhile, I was getting all this training and doing it myself. And then it started flipping that it felt more awkward to not let people know that there's a safe, off-label, but legal use of low-dose ketamine that could help you get relief. And why wouldn't I share that with them? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I want them to suffer less? And that done in a therapeutic setting, it's just amazing what can happen and lowers people's suffering, decrease their suffering, decrease their pain, and help them feel like they can function better again.
In a way that endures. I think that's important too. You know, it's not just for that day. Like, yes, there are, you know, you need to repeat the dose, but it does endure. It does change relationships. It does change coping. It does help.
It does change baseline.
Baseline,
This sounds like it really sets the table for long-term order change to, I like how you said, endure.
And every single therapist I know gets stuck with couples. And no matter how good, experienced, and well-trained they are, they get stuck. And this is another potential intervention when you hit that wall.
Yeah, to use it in conjunction with EFT. I definitely can see the benefits of having that with EFT and having EFT with that. I mean, I couldn't imagine, and maybe there's studies out there, but doing ketamine and then having behavioral therapy, just, I don't know. EFT feels like a very natural fit because we go to those depths with them, which is where the medicine is going to take them. And we can really process and integrate on a level because of the training that we have as EFT therapists and EFT.
EFT is the best fit. We, as you're saying, Annabelle, all of our interventions are so applicable, and we also know how to hold space for suffering. And, you know, I don't think other models train their clinicians to hold space for suffering, but that's exactly what's needed for any ketamine-assisted psychotherapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doing really good, deep work really does stretch the therapist your own window of tolerance to tolerate the fact that your clients are not okay. I mean, you think that it would be inherent that that's what we're there for, but we often also want to jump to, let's hurry up and get you feeling better fast because I can't handle the fact that you may come in here week after week and still be stuck in the cycle.
Yeah. 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 And as we know, psychotropic medicines are only 30 to 40% effective. So a lot of good people suffer with depression, anxiety, OCD, and PTSD. And the medicines help a little bit, but they come with many side effects that we all know about. They help a little bit for a little bit, but not a long time. So it's just, you know, psychiatry hasn't had a lot of innovation. And so I'm welcoming the low dose psycholytic dose of ketamine for as an innovative, you know, when we research is currently being done. It's been done for years now. It's continuing to happen. We're going to keep learning more, but I'm really grateful that we have the ability to help our clients access low dose ketamine to decrease their own suffering. Why not help them find it?
Yeah. Are there any negative side effects to ketamine or such a thing
there
as
are.
A trip or?
There's high blood pressure, transient high blood pressure, which Jen referenced. There's nauseousness. Jen referenced that too. Sometimes, occasionally, there's vomiting. You do fast 4 to 6 hours before you take ketamine to lower that. And as Jen referenced, Zofran, that's often provided before the dose to decrease nauseousness. Mania can increase on ketamine, so you don't give your manic clients ketamine. Mm-hmm. It's not safe for pregnancy. Studies aren't sure about breastfeeding. I'm trying to think of my slide about the contraindications. Psychosis, schizophrenia are also conditions where you don't want to offer or provide ketamine and untreated high blood pressure. So what's really good about ketamine is it doesn't decrease the rate of respiration. So our body is dissociated in ways that give us relief that ketamine provides, but it doesn't decrease our respiration. So it's not scary. We're not at risk for not breathing.
It's a calming, more like you said, it's been used traditionally as a sedative. So I can imagine I hear like the therapist asking these questions like, oh my gosh, what if you have both your couples taking it and they get reactive in the cycle? And I'm thinking maybe not so likely to happen.
Not so likely to happen. It's really hard to have anything happen quick on ketamine. And that's part of the therapeutic value for us. And it's actually how a therapist with a client on ketamine can be helpful because we can gently direct. We can use that slow down processing for their greater goals that we know about because they told us them before the dose and in general their treatment goals.
And both of you have tried ketamine.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've been through it. I think I remember on your webinar, I loved how you framed it as running it through your own body so that you have that experience, you know, because it, I would imagine that there would be a whole lot more questions about how it would feel and what it might be like for a patient, for a client, if you haven't ever experienced it versus being somewhat familiar with how it will be experienced.
Yeah, I love I mean, we are like this in EFT. We are human. We are all together with sharing our humanity with each other and our clients. While we never make it about ourselves, we understand that we are human as they are, and suffering is a shared experience. So when my clients are interested and they ask me or I volunteer that I've done it too, it is a level of safety that's created because it's not just something I read about. And many medical prescribers are not allowed to touch the supply. That's what anesthesia says. You don't touch the supply for obvious reasons. And so many of them have never tried it. So they've actually misinformed my clients. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Let me tell you what's been prescribed to me and how I've used it successfully and safely. And I've experimented low dose, high dose, troches, IMs, IVs, at home, not at home. I've experimented. And so I've gotten benefit every single time. It's not the same, But I've gotten benefit every single time.
That's wonderful. And for you, Jen, can you talk about your experience?
Of taking ketamine and what it's been, what it's been like.
Aside from what you discussed previously, more like logistically.
I mean, more logistically.
Well, you spoke a little bit earlier about the logistics, like being, you know, but what was it like for you?
Well, yeah, it's similar to Catherine. I've tried IM, I've tried IV, I've done troches, and they have all been positive experiences, and I've learned something from every, you know, every single time I've tried it. And when I've done it with my husband, it's been, you know, I think a lot of people are afraid, like, oh, like, I'm going to be a real meanie. Like, if you know, my true self is going to just come out, I'm not going to be able to be soft. I'm just going to be a jerk. And, but that did not happen. Turns out, deep down, I'm super sweet. You know, that's what I found out, right? So
you're sweet on the surface too.
And on the surface too, but I think I bring this up because a lot of people are afraid. Oh no, if I take ketamine and I'm not in control, my true self is going to come out, and I'm going to be a jerk. That's what's at the bottom. I just suspect it, and I rarely see that. I actually have never seen it. But I don't know if it ever happened. And it certainly wasn't true for me. Like, I really felt soft and more connected and clear in my love. So that was my experience.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And sort of what you're describing to me, I feel like we experience in therapy anyway on different levels where really a client is saying, I'm scared to be fully open and that vulnerable because I don't know what's going to come out or what's going to be seen and how that's going to land on my partner and if they'll like it, you know, or if they'll be like, sayonara, I didn't like that, I'm out of here, you know. You know, very reassuring in your experiences that it's nothing to be scared of and that there's a whole lot of positive and a whole lot of benefit. And again, you know, the hallmark of it is this isn't used to go out and get high. You know, that's not it at all, not even close to it. Mm-hmm. And it really helps us reach these depths that have been a little bit more difficult to get to using all the things that we use without the use of ketamine. It just helps us get that much deeper, but then also coming alongside it in stepping in it with the client while under the influence with our tool bag of EFT skills and our hearts really helps us even deepen the work and helps for integration and second order change that endures over time.
That's right. Awesome. Yeah. And I just want to say, like, it is very safe, as we've been talking about, and as you said, but it's new, it's groundbreaking. And so if anybody is scared, talk about that fear, process it. Like, you don't need to strong arm yourself through to being okay with ketamine, like let's make space for it and understand it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So if you are a therapist watching this and you're thinking, okay, this is really interesting, I want to get trained. So you guys are going to be offering a training. And I mean, in general, how much training does a therapist need to get before they can start advertising as I'm a ketamine assisted therapist?
Such a big question, Annabelle. It's a little bit like the EFT world. Sometimes coming out of an externship, which is now about 28 hours of training, people describe themselves as an EFT therapist. Some people wait till after core skills, which still is 48 hours, to say I'm an EFT therapist. Some people don't say they're an EFT therapist till they get certified. And so the same process happens, in my experience, after ketamine training. There's no certifying body yet for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. And you can go to one training and then say, I've had training in this. So I've been naming my number of hours of training, which at this point is over 130 hours. And I name where I get who I've gotten my training from. I'm proud of my investment. I'm proud of my efforts. It's been a huge task the last couple of years. And, you know, I constantly face my areas of discomfort. I've never been a recreational drug user, never. And I'm actually quite scared of alternative states. It's not my natural way of being, but I understand the value of them for me mm-hmm. and the need for them for me to grow my brain's flexibility. And that's what ketamine has done for me. It's in a safe way, allowed me to gently get closer and closer to non-ordinary states of consciousness, which is how, by the way, Indigenous people have always used for healing, as you referenced Indigenous ceremony, Annabelle, to gently go, to bring my brain in that direction, which is so different than how usually I've used my brain the last 50 years. And so it's grown me. It's made me a more flexible person. But my palms sweat just thinking about it, because I have no experience with recreation. I never was tempted. I had no hardship saying no to my peers. This is truly like a new intervention for our field. Why wouldn't I consider it? Why wouldn't I look into it deeply? Why wouldn't I try it safely? And then when ready, it took me a year and a half of training before I even started talking about it with a client. So that's just me. I'm a little cautious. I'm a little slower. I want more competency and more safety in my training than maybe other people want or need, which is their choice and their prerogative. So there isn't a standard yet, kind of like as I started with EFT.
I think I love what you said. Maybe the standard would be a felt sense of competency, because I've seen this trend of therapists to collect certifications as a way to say that they're competent without actually developing the competencies in the
and feeling it, as you highlight, a felt sense of competency.
Yes.
Yeah. And that means I think I know what I'll do when something goes awry, or I feel well enough prepared to hold space for that which I'm not sure I'll experience, for the potential unknowns that might happen. Like that takes a lot of courage. And ketamine has really amplified that requirement of me. I love the map of EFT. I love the map of EFT. I'm a person who loves maps. There isn't a map with ketamine.
Yeah.
But if you are an EFT therapist, then you are uniquely positioned to be able to add this intervention of ketamine to your practice, because we, you know, as Catherine mentioned before, we're already able to sit with people in pain and not, you know, and not try and fix it immediately, not squelch it or squash it, and just be with them.
So. And I'm so glad that you spoke to that part. You know, I also grew up as, you know, during a lot of the anti-drug campaigns, the dare to keep kids off of drugs and such. And I've not done, you know, I'll admit I had some marijuana before and, you know, not super impressed, you know, but in general, and that was more of the, it's so much more natural for you. Take that for your anxiety instead of this. I'm like, yeah, but I can't really function on it, you know, so
doesn't that count?
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm not anxious, but I'm also a couch potato and I can't accomplish anything. So I don't see the benefit. So yeah, I really like, you know, what you're saying is, again, this is not recreational drugs. We're not saying go out and get high. It's not to reach the state of euphoria. It's very intentional for therapeutic purposes to help real solid deep work to happen, which I think is a core difference. And so it really is a therapeutic aid and a tool in that way. So that's so beautifully said. And okay, so you guys are doing a ketamine assisted therapy and you're doing it in Northern California, right? May 4th. And this is in-person and online hybrid.
Yep. Okay. Both. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And if folks want to attend that, where would they sign up?
NCCEFT.com, Northern California Community for EFT.com.
Perfect. And how will they find the both of you? Let's say that they like to, maybe you're going to be doing another ketamine assisted EFT training somewhere else in the States, or maybe they want to invite you to their community to do a training. How can they get in touch with you both?
TheEFTCafe.com is our website, and you can get on our mailing list, and we have a subscription program, and yes, we'd love people to join us, of course.
Can they email you through the website if they want to invite you to their community to train?
Yes.
Perfect. And yeah. I'll make sure that I put the link for both of the NCC, you said ncceft.com?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So I'll make sure I put that in the description for the video on YouTube. Sorry, if you're listening in podcast form, you might just have to rewind. And yeah. The EFT, so T-H-E, the EFTcafe.com.
That's
and
right.
They can email you through that website, or do you have direct email addresses that you feel comfortable giving out, sharing, that people could reach you?
Sure. I'm KatherineReem@gmail.com. First
Jen?
And last name, Gmail.
Okay.
Yeah. JenniferOlden@gmail.com.
Perfect. Perfect. So I really hope that you guys, you know, that you're listening today, that you're really intrigued. And I'm sure for as many questions as we ask, there's a lot more. And certainly there's a lot more that will go into this, but more than can be said in a short podcast. So I really hope that you will seek out Katherine and Jennifer and attend the ketamine-assisted therapy training, EFT training, or invite them to your area to do the ketamine-assisted EFT training for your community, and that you'll just contact them and look them up with the EFT Cafe. You can also find some of their videos on YouTube, which are pretty spectacular. So
thanks, Annabelle. Really fun to talk with you.
Yeah. Great to
talk with you. Thank you both so much for being on, and we just appreciate you. Is there anything else that you would like to mention that you feel is important before we wrap for today?
I just thank you for making space for this groundbreaking new therapy. We really appreciate it.
And I'll say EFT with ketamine assist offers both client and clinicians a way to have new therapeutic windows.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. And thank you for opening this up for us to be able to ask some questions and to get some exposure and to learn some new tools along our way in our EFT journey to just provide more effective healing.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, thank you both so much. Guys, make sure that you check out the description for the video for information and links regarding today. And as always, make sure that you hit subscribe, because more videos are on the way. Don't forget to buy my book, Using Relentless Empathy in the Therapeutic Relationship, Connecting with Challenging and Resistant Clients, for helping professionals. Available on Amazon or on my website, www.drbugatti.com.